This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Oops, I'm here.
Karina Anglada.
Y'all can't see it. I'm tearing up right now.
And Darius Thomas.
I'm going to do all of that over.
Our next guest needs no elaborate introduction. She is a trailblazer in the sports creative industry, a thought leader with extensive experience, and is a pro's pro. Today's guest, Deandra Seymour, shares about her love for music, the most impactful moments throughout her career, and how she made it to where she is today as the Big East Conference's Director of Digital Media and Social Content.
What time are we going, Darius?
31.
What? Darius, you were way off that time. I feel like I was on point that one.
See, now you and Darius were exactly on mine, so.
Yep.
That's weird. Wow.
It was in on my end, myself and Brock were on the same time.
This whole sink will be the death of me.
You threw your hand up. Are you good?
Did I miss the clap?
Oh, yeah, you did. Okay. You want to do it again?
No, it's okay.
Well, now that has to be the intro.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Creative Sports Podcast. We're back with another episode, and today we have Deandra Seymour, also known as D, who is the Director of Digital Media and Social Content at the Big East. D, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So you've kind of been on you know, some things back in 2020 when we were doing virtual and all that, but this is your first episode of like getting to tell your story. So kind of walk us through the journey of how you became who you are today.
Okay. Wow. It goes back a fair bit, actually. I guess I started at sophomore year when I was at Old Dominion. I decided my freshman year to work in the laundry room. And that's where we delivered packages and cleaned, you know, all the sports gear and cleaned the 15 passenger vans that teams would rent out. But one day when I was delivering some packages, I saw that we had a video office. And that's kind of my first realization that this could be a job. And I was already kind of interested in doing video. And that next summer, I decided to apply for a student video position, and it's kind of been history from there.
So at what age did you kind of get into the arts or video? Was it just video, or was it some design or some drawing, or where did that inspiration come from?
I think it was like 10 or so when I made my first video. I didn't even know a Windows Movie Maker or anything like that, iMovie. I literally decided, my parents got me a little like camcorder, and I laid out a whole bunch of pictures on my bed and went to the CD player, and I put in like a CD. I think it was It's Wonderful World or something like that. And I played the CD, and as I was recording, I would just pan over every single photo I had laid out. And then after that, I showed it, and I was like, you know, this is a work of art. But I didn't realize that you can just put photos into a movie maker and, you know, make a slideshow that way.
That resonates. That hits, because I feel like the first time you complete anything creative, that is a work of art. It feels like you just like,
I thought I climbed like Mount Everest. Something.
Yes. I wish I could bottle up that feeling. That's amazing.
So to fill in that gap from when you were, you know, when you first got that camcorder to, you know, getting that itch in college, kind of what did you do in between there to like kind of keep it going? Did you notice in like high school or middle school that, you know, you were really into creative, or was it more like sports, or kind of how did you spend those years?
Yeah, I think after the discovery of Movie Maker, I just started playing around with stuff all the time. I would make myself like little hype, like inspirational videos using like pictures I got and songs I liked. I was always the person in group projects in high school that like, I was always the one that was like, okay, I'm going to edit this. I'm going to do it. We're going to go really hard on this. And we're going to like create this masterpiece. And, you know, usually those did well because we put so much effort into them, or I put a lot of effort into making sure the edits looked really good at the end of the day.
When did you pivot? Like, when was that shift for you that you were like, I can do this. I can make a career, or I am making a career for it. Take us through your journey and your stops after that point.
Yeah. So I think once I decided I wanted to work in sports, I chose ODU because of their sport management program. And then that sophomore year when I got the job, I think that was when I kind of first started being like, okay, this is something like I'm really passionate about sports. I'm really passionate about being creative. My boss at the time showed me the Seasons by Colorado. And that was my first time. I was like, wow, this is like, nobody was doing anything like that at the time.
It was so good.
Their video series,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think kind of a lot of what people do today is because of what they were doing back then. John Snelson, I remember I tweeted him at the time and I was just like, oh, this is what I want to do. Like when I grow up, I want to do something like that. And, you know, to look back at that now, almost 10 years later, which is crazy, to be like, okay, like you kind of did it. You kind of made it. It's something special for sure.
Yeah. I remember being at Georgia and seeing those, having, you know, started something similar, but obviously Oxford, Mississippi is definitely not in any comparison look wise to Boulder, Colorado, and just being floored by just the amazingness. Cause I know that they were trying to build something there with the football coach that they had at the time. Mm-hmm. And just how they were just they were selling the city and not really, or the town and not really the program. So
yeah, I think they went like 0-12 that year or something like that. It was the work that they did for a team that wasn't that great was amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were using red cameras. They were using stuff that people didn't even know existed at the time.
Yep. And it's funny to see now with John still being there and, you know, obviously Coach Prime being there and seeing what they did at Jackson State video wise and having Prime. He didn't even need a new video staff or to bring what he had done. It was just having John there to build off of what they had already built. So it's almost like a full circle.
Exactly.
I didn't realize that person has been in charge of video this whole time.
Yes.
Yeah. He left
with
and
football
came back.
Video.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Because football video, for many people who know, used to be just, I mean, it was at one point only coaches' cut-ups. And
right.
John was one of the first ones who directly for football was the video coordinator who was creating like creative content.
Yep.
Because before then, people were doing some hype videos, but it wasn't like a TV show. And they were doing an amazing television show for a team that was not very good.
Yeah, no, I think that was the first video that I saw creative-wise where I was like, why aren't we doing this? Why? Because at ODU, mm-hmm. we were just kind of doing broadcast, and every now and again, we would, you know, make a video for social, but it wasn't anything to their level at all.
Yeah. And I'll even take it a step further back for us, because it's funny that theirs was called Seasons or something. Mm-hmm. And at Ole Miss in 2011, we started a series called The Season, but we got our idea. Turner Gill was the coach at Kansas, and they were doing a webisode that was like 15 minutes long or whatever. And they weren't very good in football either. But we took that idea and said, hey, what's that?
They still aren't.
Actually, Kansas is doing really.
I know. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Nebraska rivalry dies hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But we got our idea from them and turned it into an actual television series. And so it was a lot of teams in like 2009, 2010, and a few years into that who were trying to, you know, grow with YouTube and grow with the new trend of getting away from just the traditional. So
yep.
It's always awesome to see the changing of the guard. So going back to ODU, ODU's had some talented people come out of there, video, photo, graphic design. What were they doing at the time that you were there and, you know, after you made the pivot to really give you that idea that, you know what, this can start a trail of really good, talented individuals?
Honestly, I think we all just were kind of really free flowing and having fun. And I think that's, you know, important. We weren't really focused as much on, you know, this is what A, B, and C you need to do to make it to the next step. And this, like, it was just like, okay, like, what do you want to do? What are you passionate about? Like, what do you think is going to make you better? And just go and do it. I think, Paul and Boise still there. They've given me like the freedom. They gave me the freedom to just try things. I was like, I want to do this on After Effects. And they were like, okay, go do it. they weren't telling us, no, we don't do that. Or, you know, no, this person does that. They're just like, go try it, go do it. I was like, okay, like, I'm going to make an intro video for our streams. Like, go ahead, go do it. And so, I think that creative freedom really helped us. Everyone that worked there, and, you know, some people are still there that, you know, you see the growth now. I go back and look at their like socials every now and again. I'm just like, wow, you know, none of this stuff was really happening before. And now their socials look so different and everything kind of looks so much better.
At the time around the industry, were there any women that you kind of saw around the industry doing what you're doing or what you were aspiring to do that gave you kind of a glimpse to say, you know, this is actually possible versus, you know, I like doing it. Maybe I could do it. Like, did you see any of that while you were coming up through ODU?
Yeah, I mean, Kareen, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I am. I mean, I remember when I started following you, you were at Golden State, and I just remember some of the stuff that you were making that was incredible. And I think sometimes you see things and you're just like, oh, okay, like there's other people out there, and it kind of gives you that little bit of inspiration, you know, that you can make to the next level. Because sometimes you're just like, oh, we're going to be stuck, you know, just being GAs or student workers or lower level. But then when you see people at the professional stage, you're like, okay, like this is possible.
Y'all can't see it. I'm tearing up right now. that means a lot. I think, you know, it's an interesting question, Darius, and not to turn this to me at all, but I didn't have that many people. I mean, at Illinois, I remember there's a woman named Cassie Arner who was like head, you know, football SID. And I saw her and I was like, dang, she's like running stuff over here. Like, this is cool, but I don't necessarily, yeah, you know, want to do that. And there were other students. There are other students that I like totally looked up to. And it's so true. I think, especially as a young woman at that time, it's like, you're kind of like looking for folks that you can kind of emulate. And yes, like I looked up to guys too, in the similar way that I looked up to women, but, and cause I was like kind of trying to compete with everybody, right? Like, I want to be the best. I don't want to be the best woman. I want to be the best person, right?
Never dies, right?
Yeah. But I that means a lot, sharing that. But I think there's been a lot of strides, but there's a lot more work that needs to be done for sure. And I think a lot of people feel that same way of what you mentioned, Deandra. Like, you always feel like you're that GA or that intern. Like, how do I get to that next level? So like, looking to anyone that's doing what you want to do is kind of like you're like studying them. And I don't know if we had, like, if we didn't have social media,
yeah,
I'm curious your thoughts. Like,
yeah,
does social media like change? Do you think it would change like the trajectory of your career? Because I feel like you see people and places that you want to go and types of work that you want to do. Like, does the social media component of the art industry like inspire you in any way?
I mean, I think definitely, at least the beginning of my career, I think I wouldn't have gotten my first job at Xavier, or really even been able to do what I did at FSU if I didn't have what I posted on social at the time, just because, you know, I didn't have a full reel. It was just, hey, like, this is what I made for this team. This is what I made for this team. And people saw it and they were like, okay, like, I can see the potential. I can see the talent there.
So, like, you mean, like, it was almost like your demo reel of sorts.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't
without
know
actually
was.
Putting.
I was yeah, just, I was just being like, hey, this is the stuff I can do. I didn't know, like, you had to do reel, and there's kind of some specifics on how you make your reel and what to include and what to not include and the length and all this other stuff that you learn as you, you know, get older. But I knew that I could give them these three videos that did really well or that I thought looked good that kind of showcased my talent, and I could kind of present that. And I think the same thing as when I'm looking for inspiration from people, the stuff that they put on social media is, you know, something that you can look at and you're like, okay, this is the benchmark for me. And this is, you know, kind of where I want to reach and where I want to be in the next year, next 5 years.
Love that. I'm curious, you know, if you could tell your younger self at ODU something like, now you could tell your younger self when you were first starting, what would that one thing be?
To relax, to just enjoy it. I think in the beginning I was, you know, very eager to move up the ladder and get to, you know, a position that kind of I'm in now. And I probably took some things for granted and, you know, didn't enjoy what I should have enjoyed out of, you know, a lot of the places I was at. And so, yeah, definitely just to kind of slow down and be present a little bit more.
I'm curious, enjoy what? I'm going to dig a little.
Like,
what in particular? Because it resonates a little bit, which is why I'm asking.
I think sometimes, like, we become our jobs. And so a lot of the relationships and, just the aspects of where you are, especially when you're in unique places, you don't really stop and be like, wow, like, this is a great place to be. These are great people to be around. Cause you're just like, all right, I'm going to be here for 1 year. I'm going to be here for 2 years. And then I'm going to the next place. I'm looking for jobs. I'm trying to apply here, apply there. And so you're not really realizing the importance of the people that you're going to be around. And then also that one day you might get to a place where you're like, I'm burnt out. I don't want to do this anymore. And then you're like, okay, but there's nothing else. Like, I don't have any hobbies. I don't have those connections, like personal relationship connections that I need to have. So just to kind of be a little bit more present and, you know, make sure that you're not only focused on your career all the time.
That's good. From ODU, you went to FSU. Is that how
correct.
That
okay. Yep.
So you leave ODU to go to FSU. Talk about your time in Tallahassee.
Yeah. It's a great 2 years. I started actually in Coach's video doing what we did. I did, I guess, football, soccer, baseball, softball, beach volleyball, I think, or the sports that you cover in Coach's video. But it's mainly obviously football because that's a everyday Coach's video in football, for those who don't know, is very stressful. Especially as a student sometimes. But it's fun. It's fun to be around. Those were, I guess, the dark years of FSU as well I was at. So that was even more fun. But I think my spring semester, my first year there, is when I got into the digital space. I asked Elliot, who's the boss of digital media at the time, and I was just like, hey, I'm kind of interested in doing digital too, like coaching videos, you know, not exactly where I want to go into. I want to be a little bit more creative. He was like, yeah, we're looking for people to do it. And he basically just told SID, he's like, he's here to do whatever you guys need. So I was going out to track, tennis, swimming, golf, anything in the spring, beach volleyball, anything, just to make videos and kind of present my ideas to all the SIDs. And they were, you know, pretty much down for it because they didn't really have anybody making creative videos for, especially your smaller Olympic sports where you just kind of still see people don't make videos as much for them. So I was willing to do it and kind of stuck with the track team a lot, and they kind of brought me on, and I would be out there all the time with them. And so that's kind of really how I started with creative at FSU. It was just like, hey, I want to do this. Can we do it? And they were like, yeah, sure, go ahead.
So looking back, you know, you talk about how you kind of took on that, you embraced that of working with Olympic sports and, you know, kind of doing whatever it took to elevate yourself and learn and grow through it. Do you think that those were like things that you needed to do to make you who you are today? Or was it kind of just like, because you know how some people, they don't want to do quote unquote grunt work or, oh, if I'm not working with football or basketball or whatever the big sport is, why can't I do that? You know, why can't I go hang out with this person and shoot video for them? Because that's how I'm going to go viral. Was it necessary to start at no matter what level, no matter what team, to kind of sharpen your skills with those sports that may not get that love every day?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have the most opportunities with Olympic sports. You don't have the same amount of access. You don't have the same amount of freedom to be creative with some of your other sports. They, especially at, you know, your larger schools, a lot of stuff that you do are, you know, approved and checked by so many different people. There's a lot more red tape. Whereas you can go and just do anything almost with your Olympic sports. And, you know, I ran track and played soccer growing up and still a fan of those sports. So being able to, especially out of a Florida State where, you know, those teams are so big. And so being able to just be there among like Olympic level athletes to me was something I was like, why wouldn't I want to make videos with them? Why wouldn't I, you know, want to be around their practices? You know, kind of their work ethic kind of inspires you as well, because it's like, if they're out here training all the time, I should be showcasing that. And that's going to make me better as well.
Absolutely.
So can you give us a little background on what you do today, running digital social at the Big East?
Yeah. So basically the half my job is kind of doing the social part. And I'll probably say 75% of my job is probably doing the social part. So right now, basketball season, game days, tweeting, posting, so it's me and then our creative services coordinator, Danny. He, you know, makes a lot of our content. So it's pretty much posting, tweeting, stuff like that. And then you have the other side, which is doing our shoot around and our fast break, our live shows. So producing those, making, you know, your run of shows, your scripts for them. And then you have kind of the other project manager, I guess I would say, part of it, where it's a lot of, emailing and meetings with people that we're talking to about, you know, figuring out graphics for our tournaments and our other vendors for video. We do, you know, we hire people to come film, so we have like high quality content for our spots later on. And I'm also in charge of making sure with our broadcasters, our institutional spots are in the right spot or in the right place. So I get the schedule for those, which something I never knew even existed before I got here. I was like, oh, I didn't know somebody sat down every week and said, okay, this is going in spot one, this is going in spot two, three, four, et cetera. Right now it's a little bit of a learning curve just because I've been such a content creator before. So it's a little bit different being on the other side of things and just kind of being in that manager role.
Yeah. And I was going to touch on that. It's like transitioning from being a day-to-day content creator, video editing, all of the things, to now management. How has that transition been for you? And do you embrace it, or do you kind of miss the day-to-day of being in it?
Right now, I don't miss the day-to-day, if I'm being completely honest. it's been a breath of fresh air to be learning again and like just discovering kind of what I'm passionate about again. Every day is like a new challenge, and there's a lot more now that I'm responsible for, which, you know, is a bit of a blessing to just be able to say, okay, like, this is your new task every day. These are your new things that you have to do every day. Before, I felt like it was just every day I was doing the same things over and over and over again. And now it's like, all right, like, here's a list of, you know, 10 things that we have to do today and trying to figure it out. And right now it's a lot of just learning from what they did in the past and trying to figure out how, because me and Danny are both new at the Big East. So trying to figure out what we want to do moving forward and, you know, making the Big East and our content kind of our own.
How do you focus on teams that, from a conference level? Is there a specific time that you focus on specific teams? Do you think about that ahead of time? Because I assume there has to be some level of making sure that everybody gets their play and that you're highlighting to not showcase any favoritism, so to speak, or what other people might consider favoritism. How does all that
Yeah,
work?
So, I mean, if you ask our fans, we probably don't showcase certain teams enough, but, you know, that's the nature of the fandom, especially in the Big East. So basketball is king and queen. So, you know, we put a lot of our resources towards showcasing our basketball teams. And then when it comes to Olympic sports, our coverage kind of ramps up around their championship seasons. As far as basketball goes, you know, our top teams are going to get our top coverage, but at the same time, Big East basketball, especially right now, is almost top to bottom high level. So it becomes hard, but also easy to just, you tweet something and people are going to care about it because it's Big East basketball. So I definitely think right now we're in a position where you're not actually just focused on one team or two teams. It's more of a conference wide, you know, focus of how are we pushing our conference? How are we pushing the overall resume of the Big East to like everybody else?
And what does your calendar look like? I mean, do you have every single game on there? How do you stay organized with all of that? Because I feel like a lot of our listeners maybe come from working with one team, but you're working with a conference. So
yeah,
I want to know all about your schedule and your organization and time management.
Yeah. So about up until like last week, I only had basketball games on the schedule. So at any given time, I probably would only have, you know, 8 games probably a day. But since the spring season has started, my calendar has gotten a lot busier, which, you know, we don't cover those as the same as basketball, but they're on the calendar, so I know about it. So it does look overwhelming sometimes when I just look at first glance. I'm like, there's a lot going on today. But as far as staying organized, I mean, we cover all the games. So for the most part, it's just making sure that we know, you know, what time games are, what needs to happen. You know, Mondays are a little bit hectic, we always say, because we have our weekly awards going out. The AP polls are going out. We have a couple other releases and things that go out on Mondays. But for the most part, it's pretty much meetings that really kind of get you caught up a little bit because, you know, I think today I had about 4 meetings before I jumped on here. So it's trying to organize yourself. It's like, okay, if we're posting this at noon and then I have a meeting at 11 to make sure that's, you know, kind of scheduled out and making sure that everybody's on the same page of what time things are going out, what time, you know, we're planning on posting. Cause sometimes it's not, you know, it doesn't coincide when our releases go out, and stuff like that.
What are you all using for kind of like content calendar and scheduling and all that?
For the most part, since we're kind of a small conference, it is, a bit more, you know, informal communication and just using, you know, text or emails. We're on Zooms with each other at least once a day. So it's more just talking to each other just because it's at any given time, it's only maybe 2 or 3 people that are in the loop of what's going, like what is actually like being posted or responsible for posting. But we have like a Trello account where anything like big projects, big things that are coming up, we'll put on there. We use Google Sheets all the time to make sure we're keeping track of what's going on. You know, make sure this person is responsible for this, this person is responsible for that, what needs to come out, when it's coming out, stuff like that.
What's been one of your best experiences or most memorable experiences in this journey?
Yeah, it's a bit of a two-parter, so I'll start with like the to me, like the sentimental one, which was In 2019, my first year at Xavier, I was with the women's soccer team when they made their historic run. They won their first ever regular season title and then followed that up with their first ever tournament title, then followed that up with their first ever NCAA tournament win. And it was a whirlwind of a season. And I made a video at the end of the year just recapping the entire season. And I use a song that they walked out to for every home game, which is This Is Me from The Greatest Showman musical. And I didn't go to their banquet when they showed the video, but we had a little, after the year, they had a little Zoom meeting. I think it was probably because of COVID, they had a Zoom meeting, and all the girls and the coaches and everything was just like that, like we watch it, we keep watching it over and over again. We cried when we saw it, stuff like that. And, you know, to me that means more than a lot of other things, because, you know, when you can resonate and you can kind of connect with the people that you work with, I think that's the most important part about our job, is to make sure that you're forming those relationships and you're connecting with people on a deeper level. And then, so the other part of that question is, you know, is a success level probably the most, you know, special moment was in 2018. I was with FSU women's soccer. We won the national championship. It was a journey. They had to play pretty much, they had to go through every big school that you could think of: USC, Penn State, UCLA. Who else did they play? They played Stanford. Then obviously UNC in the championship. And, you know, Stanford was going on probably like, I think it was like a 36 game undefeated run that year. And obviously UNC in Chapel, in Cary, at the time, like for the champ, it's like, it's almost unheard of to like do what they did that year. So that was definitely a special moment. I was a solo shooter for that. So being able to capture everything and, for them to win, you know, their second national championship now. Obviously, they have four of them, which is crazy, but it was a special moment for sure.
Did you get a ring?
I did get a ring.
Awesome.
Heck yeah. That's awesome. And solo shooting. When you're covering those games then, and I'm all locked in, because I feel like for me, you mentioned it before, but working with those, you know, Olympic sports teams, like when I worked at Auburn, working with Auburn women's soccer changed the trajectory of my entire life. And many different ways. How do you cover a championship game as a solo shooter? Are you moving around? Are you, you know, first half, I'm going to be here and then I'm going to move there. Talk us through your coverage plan back then. Or did you even have one? You just kind of like went with it.
So the semifinal, I'm just going to shoot this. Like, we were playing Stanford. It was, I remember, one of our defenders, we were in the elevator before we were going to the game, and she just looked at me and she said, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "Are you nervous?"
She was like, "Oh no."
And she was like, "Yeah, I am." And I was just like, "Oh man, no." And it was, cause it was just like, I don't know if anybody thought that we were going to win that game. But after that, it was like, "Oh man, like, we have to plan all this stuff." We didn't have anything planned. Like me, so it was me and Ty, who was the marketing guy. He also did the tweet, like the live tweeting during the games. And we didn't really have anything planned. So like the night, you have, I think, 2 days, or maybe it's 2 days now. Maybe it was one before, but we were just in the hotel, like lobby, this at a table all day, just being like, we need to get this ready. We need to call of our alumni, make sure they make a video so we can put out, you know, wishing everybody good luck. We need to make signs, you know, if case we won, and, you know, it's all this planning that it's like, okay, after the game, if we do win, this is what we're going to post. If we don't win, this is how we're going to go about it. All of this stuff. We were there literally all day and night trying to plan for the next day. And then shooting the game, I think I just stood in one spot. You know, obviously changed for the half to the other side of the field, but, you know, looking back, I would probably, you know, do it differently, but you don't want to move, because you're just like, if I move and I miss the goal, if I move and I, you know, miss something happen, like, you'll never, like, you're going to regret that forever. But it went as well as it could. It was a late goal. They won 1-0. It was the celebrations afterwards are just so memorable, just because it's just people are crying. Like, you never realize, I think, when before you get to a national championship, how much it means like to win one. And then when you see like the relief on all of their faces and just them like that trophy lift, and you, and I don't think I realized that that shot is going to be used for years and years and years and years. I remember after I left FSU and I was at Xavier, and like 2 years later, I was watching like, I think, a football game, and they're running their, you know, their institutional spot. And like that shot is what they use. Like my shot is what they use on it. And you're just like, you're in the moment and never realize it. And then you're just like, oh man, like, I'm so glad I was there. You know, you're just going to remember it forever.
Man, that brings back some memories.
Mm-hmm. That's really special. That's cool. That's a reminder, I think, to all of us that, like, you know, when we're in it, like you've said, to remember kind of the journey, to remember that what we're creating, what we're capturing, what we're designing or editing, it's a lot of times bigger than ourselves. So that's really special. I love that.
Yeah. Covering that national championship solo, I remember doing the same thing for men's tennis in 2019.
It's tough.
It's the pressure zone. It's like, what if I miss something? Because, I mean, even though those are like nationally televised, can you get the footage?
Or what if your card doesn't work or something happened to that, or your battery dies?
Oh, I mean, let's talk about that for a second, though, because I'm going to say it. Whatever. I don't work for the team anymore.
Uh-oh.
Okay, Klay Thompson. No, it's not bad. But I think it's totally relevant to this whole conversation, right? Klay Thompson, Warriors are playing the Bulls in Chicago. He's going off.
That's
from three-point land.
14, right?
The 14 three-pointers in a game, like NBA record, breaks Steph's record. I'm shooting that game. I'm not even processing. I'm like, dang, he's going off. I did not know. Like, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I did not know. But here's the thing. You're capturing everything. You're like, dang, he's going off. I got to like roll on everything. I had the back record option, but I was like, no, I'm not going to do that for this because he's on fire. Turns out the broadcast missed somehow like one of his three-pointers. So then when they're trying to edit the recap of every single three-pointer, there was one missing, but guess who got it? It was a crooked shot and terribly like framed, but I got it, right? But that's the thing. I think, you know, it happened, like life happens. Like,
yeah.
Right? The broadcast missed it. Like I basically almost missed it based on my framing being so poor. But I think, you know, it is like, D, you were saying it earlier, like, I can't leave my spot because I got to, you know, stay focused on the task at hand. And I think it's probably a good lesson for where you are now and being able to be that one, you know, man or woman band at any point if you need to step in for something. So it's a lesson out there.
Yeah. And also to what Justin was saying, being prepared, especially as a one-person shooter, it's like you got to have your checklist, you know. Give those extra batteries, those extra cards, whatever you need. Just you never know what's going to happen out there.
Yeah, because it's a lot of mishaps that can happen, will happen. You know, sometimes you just gotta roll with the punches. But I really do commend anyone who is able to do it by themselves and do a really good job. And you know, now I think a lot of people have seen different ways that you can do it as a one person shooter, because we're kind of getting out of the traditional, like, this is my spot in basketball, you know, on the floor, on the baseline, don't move unless it's between the halves. So we've seen that one person shooter kind of expand a little bit, but hasn't always been that way.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think even once I got to Xavier, I was like, wait, you don't have to shoot on the baseline the entire time. Like you have, especially in basketball, like you have every 4 minutes, you have a timeout. Like, let me get these other angles. We don't need four shooters. I mean, it'd be nice to have four shooters and everybody just stick to their spot, but you know, you can cover a basketball game by yourself and get like tons of angles during, you know, one single game.
Yep. And speaking of Xavier, they had some success in men's basketball while you were there as well. Talk about your time there and what you enjoyed most about being there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a struggle for basketball when we were there, but when I was there, I think last year, as soon as I left, they finally cracked the code. But I mean, I had a great time, you know, covering, you know, again, it's about the athletes. So when I was there, you know, all of the sports that I got to cover were, you know, just, it was great. It's one of those things where when you leave somewhere, you're like, I need to leave for my career, but you do miss, you know, the people that you meet, the athletes that you're there, and you're just like, I wish I could still stay there for them. And that's kind of, you know, what happened at Xavier. It's just I needed to leave for my career, but I loved working with everybody there. And I watched a lot of the games, or kept up at least with the results, you know, after I left. And I was happy for them last year with their run, and now to be back in the Big East and being able to see everybody again, it's definitely special to see.
Let's stay there. You've been ODU, you've been FSU, you've been at Xavier, you know, couple stops. A lot of people will leave and it's either I'm not watching any of their stuff, or like you're so embraced, like you embrace those teams and athletes and coaches and all that. Talk about how important it is to like be ingrained into the program so that even when you're leaving, you're still a fan of it.
Yeah, I mean, when I left Xavier, I went to Indiana, which is only 2.5 hours away from Cincinnati. So there was still it was easy for me to go back, and I went back quite often. And I think the first time I went back was, you know, when I realized, you know, my relationships there were like lifelong. This you go back and you see athletes in the hallways, or coaches, and they're all saying hey, and they're asking about you, and you know, they say they miss you and all that stuff, and you kind of realize, you know, how special it is to, you know, be places where you're, you know, you're appreciated, you're respected, and that, you know, you did form relationships and friendships with people that are going to last a while. And I think that is the most important part. And everybody says it. It's like you get the best content when, you know, you are like ingrained in the team, you know, and they have the respect for you, and they know that you're not going to do anything to, you know, make them look bad or anything like that. So I think that's what I had at Xavier for sure. And, you know, going from there to then now at the Big East, where you don't actually interact with the athletes or coaches pretty much at all, it is a bit different, because you're like, how are we supposed to like tell these stories, or you know, try to portray, you know, that we're connected with these teams so much when really we're not.
Yeah, that's the tough part when you're not like in the program, is like, how do you tell a story without knowing, you know, some layers of, hey, this is who they are. And so it's almost like it's tougher sometimes unless you really do your homework. So in your day-to-day now, like what kind of stories and articles or like posts or different types of content are you all looking to do as a conference?
Yeah, I think right now it is a lot about just pushing like our resume. So it's a lot of stat-based content. It's a lot of I don't even know what you call hype content, but it's, you know, when they have play, you know, good plays and stuff like that, or we put out a graphic of them, like if they're a performer, you know, really big performance, it's just trying to connect with, you know, either their nicknames or like what people say about them, and try to have a little bit more of a fan level kind of language, I guess you could say, when you're doing when you're writing your copy, just so, you know, people kind of have a connection with what you're saying, because it's kind of what they're saying as well about those athletes. And I think those posts usually go over pretty well when, you know, like I'll give an example, like Devin Carter right now is having a great year for Providence because they've had an injury to Bryce Hopkins. And you know, sometimes we post stuff about him and, you know, you're just like, is he the MVP this year? Because like, that's what they're saying on Providence's campus. Like, that's what, you know, that's what they want to hear. So, you know, sometimes you just feed into that and you don't want to obviously slight, you know, other people, but it is sometimes necessary to feed into kind of what the certain fandoms are saying about their own players.
On that note, I'm curious, did your experience at Xavier help you get to the Big East? Like, what was the catalyst, or did you just apply to this position? Did you know some folks? What was your journey like? Because I feel like a lot of times I look back on my career, some of it was like I knew of somebody, but other jobs, I didn't know anybody. What was that transition like?
I wasn't planning on leaving Indiana that year, or when I left, I was driving and I got a text message, I believe, from John Fanta, who is, you know, great broadcaster and, you know, pretty much the voice of the Big East. And he said, hey, you know, person that was in your job is leaving. I think you'd be good at this. Would you want to apply? And I was, you know, at the time I was like already thinking like, man, I want to get back to Jersey. I want to go back East. You know, that's something in the future I want to do. I didn't think it was going to be in the next month, but I was just, you know, wow. those are already in my head. And so when he texted me, I was like, are you kidding me? You know, I always had like an affinity to working in New York. I went to go to college in New York. My parents were like, no, you're not going to college in New York, but, cause they both were raised there. But, it's always something I wanted to do is work in New York and be in New York. So when he sent the text, I was like, you know, you couldn't say no to it. And, obviously I went through a couple interviews and, I think definitely working at Xavier helped. You know, there was a lot of people that could attest to, you know, my work ethic and stuff like that. So I think when the time came, it was a no brainer to say yes.
So at Indiana,
that awesome.
Was that IU?
Yes.
How was that experience? I mean, that is basketball royalty right there.
Mecca.
What's that experience like?
It is honestly, I mean, Assembly Hall's, you know, one of the greatest places you'll ever be able to attend the game or shoot in or, you know, just pretty much even just walk in. Honestly, I remember the first time I just walked in there. It's like you see it on TV so much and you walk in there like, wow, it's like this is real. And then, you know, you get to be part of like we hosted UNC that year. And obviously you have Purdue coming to town and you never we had the crosstown rivalry with Cincinnati at Xavier. So, you know, I've been part of a big game, but it's Indiana Purdue is a different level. So that was, you know, amazing. And then obviously the coaching staff there, Mike Woodson, being able to work, you know, with him, and, you know, he's a great guy. So it was definitely when I left to go to Indiana, I knew that I wanted to take that next step up and work into a Power Five conference. So when I was, you know, actually working in it, it's a different level. That's all I could say. It's a different level being in a Power Five conference, especially for a school that's like Indiana with basketball. You don't have to work in a Power Five conference to be good at your job, but it is an experience that it is really cool. From someone that, you know, started at we were in Conference USA at the time at ODU, and then went to a Power Five in ACC, and then went back to, you know, a Big East school, and then Big Ten was a different level than all of them, even the ACC. So it was a great experience there.
Which conference did you like best?
I guess I have to say the Big East, right?
Good answer.
Taking Big East.
Feeling about Family Feud.
Which Power Five conference did you like better? ACC or Big Ten?
I love my time in Tallahassee. Those are two, I mean, good years. I think Florida State had a lot to do with it, just because when you look up and down all of their sports, pretty much all of them are ranked. And so they're very elite athletes there. So, you know, obviously just everywhere you go, it's like this team has potential to win a national championship every time you step on a field or a court or track or something like that. It's a little bit different. It's not the same at, it wasn't at IU. Like, obviously in some Big Ten schools you have that, but not at IU. So I would say probably being at Florida State in the ACC, always challenging for conference or national championship, was probably a little bit better.
I felt like earlier when I said, good answer, I was on Family Feud. So we're going to we're gonna give you a little bit of a timed test. So
oh 30 seconds.
You have 30 seconds to list off as many items, things, resources that are helpful in your day-to-day job and things that you just, you know, can't live without. So
what's in your toolbox?
That's all. That's the prompt. That's the prompt. You got 30 seconds. Oh, ready, set, go.
Okay. I'm looking around right now. My water, laptop, my notebook, my phone, my pen. I use my phone so much that I don't even know what else I use during the day to day. I don't know, my microwave, my oven. I did not do good at that.
That was probably our best one.
Yeah, that was, there's no such thing as a wrong or right answer with this game. Absolutely. That's awesome. Microwave. I got to know about microwave. What are you microwaving? Leftover meals?
Yeah, anything, honestly. Like, the meetings sometimes run through lunch, so you just like have to pop something in real quick.
Yeah.
That is so true. That's, I feel like we don't talk about the realities of like work in general and like how hard some days it is to just, it seems like exist. 4 minutes to microwave something, but it's like, if you don't like have it prepackaged already, or you don't have it from the night before, it's hard. Exactly. And if you're living like solo or like cooking for yourself, it's hard. It's hard out here sometimes.
You're not trying to go out and anywhere and get some food. That doesn't, you don't have enough time to do that.
Absolutely. All right. Here's the next one. This is going to be a challenge.
Oh boy.
You've worked with a lot of sports, worked with a lot of different athletes.
Yep.
If given the opportunity to work with one sport, what would it be and why?
Oh man, this is hard. And honestly, I'm between, I can narrow it down to two.
Okay.
It would be soccer or volleyball. I think volleyball right now is just on this upward trajectory that it's like, you should be on that train. You're going to be part of something special if you're working with volleyball teams. And when I was at Xavier, and then I started working with the volleyball team at Indiana, and you know, those groups, those coaches, like they're special. And it's a lot of fun just being around them. And obviously filming the games are a lot of fun too. I'm a huge soccer fan. That's like my favorite sport. So it depends on, I guess, I feel like volleyball, I would have to be my answer just because it's like, I could probably be on any volleyball team and have fun. I don't know if I could be on any soccer team and have fun just because I like it so much. And it's like, so if like, we're not doing well or we're not, you know, and just like, I don't want to be as part of it as much. So, but I think so volleyball might be my answer.
Volleyball is definitely one of the most exciting sports that you could ever go to. Even if the team is bad, they're always going to be cheering. Like that in tennis, like you're going to get a lot of cheers and a lot of reactions. Like volleyball is just full of reactions. Like every school that I worked at, I was fortunate enough to work with volleyball, and I worked at some schools that were not good at volleyball, and then one of the best teams in the nation in volleyball. And it is definitely across the board celebration, celebration, celebration. So,
yep.
Yeah, I agree. Volleyball's killing it.
And if you're just now getting on the volleyball train, like you are so far behind, right?
Yeah.
Like volleyball has.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Get on board.
Yeah.
Get on board.
That you can be late.
It's the same with women's basketball. Like women's basketball, especially at the college level, has been really good for years, for ages. But a lot of people, it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there and enjoy it. And if you don't like it, you don't have to tell the world that you don't like it or that you don't support it.
Please don't.
I'll stand on that table and say, who cares? Like, if you don't like it, just go home, go to sleep, eat a snack. it's fine. let's talk advice.
I'm dying.
Let's talk advice. What's some advice that you would give either your younger self or younger aspiring individuals who are looking to, you know, get in this industry? All of us have spent a lot of time in this industry and have seen a lot of things. We've taken different paths. But what's some advice that you would give someone looking to jump into this industry and have a long career?
Two things. I would say, first, look after your mental health. Go to therapy. Like, I think it can benefit everybody, especially if you're dealing with burnout and stuff like that. I think I like to talk about it all the time, like people in my life. Like, when I started going to therapy the beginning of last year, like, it just helped everything, like work stress, all that. Like, it helps a lot. Especially, I think there's a lot of pressure right now for young creatives to, you know, be viral or have all of these views and imposter syndrome, all this other stuff that affects people. And I think dealing with your mental health and trying to stay on top of it is important. And then second, I would say something I used to put on like all of my projects for like work and stuff like that. Not work, but like when I was in grad school about working in sports and stuff like that, I would always put this quote that said, don't strive to make your presence noticed, just make your absence felt. And I know, I think I've taken that with me pretty much everywhere I've gone. Like, I know, if you see me on social media, like, I'm not talking usually a lot about anymore anyway. I used to, obviously, before, and it's okay to post your work. I think everybody should post their work. But if it does become too much, which it did for me myself, like, it's okay to just do your work in silence and, you know, just keep, you know, working hard and just being where you are and making, you know, the second part, make your absence felt. So when you leave somewhere, you should be able to turn around and be like, before I was there, they weren't doing this. Now that I left, they have to fill my role. They have to do all these things that I was doing. And, you know, they have to figure that out after I leave. And I think that's something that I've tried to bring everywhere I've gone. It's like, hey, you know, I might not be the best, you know, film person that's filming. I might be the best editor, but I was doing all of these other things that, you know, are kind of irreplaceable.
That's deep.
Beautiful.
Love it.
Love it.
That's advice for aspiring creatives. Obviously, this episode will be during Women's History Month. What's some advice that you would give to aspiring young women who are looking to be in this industry?
You're just as good as anybody else, honestly. Like, never, you know, never feel like you aren't good enough, or, you know, you don't have the, you're not worth being noticed or being able to apply for that job or anything like that. Like, apply for the jobs, speak your mind in meetings. I think that's something that I've even kind of right now, like, especially where I'm at right now, you're just like, you have to figure out how to, you know, to speak up and speak up for yourself and speak up for others as well, but especially for yourself. And it's okay to be that person to say, hey, this isn't right, or hey, this is how I think things should be and stuff like that. And I think right now, I think people are in the world are starting to shift a little bit and, you know, appreciate opinions coming from everybody. But I think that's something when I was first getting into the industry, I was like, I can't say this. I don't have enough experience, or I don't have the respect yet to be able to say this isn't right, or this person is doing this or doing that. And now I feel like it's almost our responsibility to be able to do that.
All right, last question for me. You talked about mental health and, you know, stepping away from it. What are some things that you do in your leisure to kind of rest, reset, or get away from the day-to-day grind of sports?
Yeah, I am big into music. I have been pretty much my entire life. So I listen to music pretty much. I mean, I just listen to it when I work, obviously, but like after work, when I just need to settle down, like, I'll just listen to music. I make playlists all the time for things just because I think it's fun to just be like, let's like find these songs that would fit into these like certain situations or moments or whatever and make a playlist out of it. So that's usually kind of how I do it. Since I moved back to New York, I want to start going Broadway more. My parents took me into Broadway when I was younger, and you know, I just love musicals so much. And so it's kind of cool to be able to be back around in the Northeast and, you know, get back to some musicals, hopefully. I saw the Wicked trailer drop last night, so I'm very excited for that.
I know Wicked Karina wants to
so
know.
So good. Yes, he already knows the question I'm going to ask. Go know. Ahead, Darius. Let's see if you already know.
I know what you're about to ask, but I want you to ask it.
What is your favorite musical? I must know.
It's Rent. I literally just watched it probably like 2 weeks ago, or not even, it's probably last week, but I watch it all the time. It is by far my favorite musical.
And the other question that she wants to know is, what are on these playlists? What's your go-to music?
Oh, my go-to music. Right now, which I thought we were getting out of it. I heard that we're supposed to be getting like 10 inches of snow or something like that. But I've started transitioning to my summer, kind of getting ready for that. So how, like a lot of house, like tropical house right now is in rotation.
I like that. I might need to get a shared link to that. That energy or all of that. I think it's fun to share music, you know, and it. You know, not just for creative inspiration or to actually like do the work, but just living it just brightens life so much. I love that. That's awesome. And we got some intel ahead of time, but you also played an instrument growing up. What instrument did you play, and how long did you play for? Do you still play?
No, I played the cello. I started in fourth grade and I continued until my senior year of high school. I kind of do wish I still played, because I think the cello is like one of the most beautiful instruments. But I don't play anymore, but I still can, you know, I listen to it especially in like musicals and stuff like that. I'm just like, I can point it out from anywhere. I'm just like, yep, that part's the cello part. Like it usually, you know, it goes back and forth, between like harmony and melody a lot. So, it's one of my favorite instruments for sure.
Do you still own one?
I don't own one. They're expensive. Instruments are expensive. Yeah, they are. I don't know if I would honestly play it a lot just because of the schedule. So I feel like it would just be sitting there. But sometimes I wish I did have like some type of instrument sometimes. So like after work I can play. I always think I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get a keyboard and I can play that a little bit as well. So it's like something else to do.
Well, I have had certain experiences myself. So sometimes I was like asking other people. But the cringiest moment you've experienced working in sports.
Oh.
And I'll share some of mine. Yeah, like, you know, for me, it was like someone telling me I couldn't, I don't even want to repeat what this man said to me. It was terrible. I think I said it on another podcast episode, but it was absolutely awful. So have you experienced any cringy moments while working in the sports industry?
Cringy moments.
I don't that you're also willing to share. I'll caveat with that.
Not off the top of my head. And if I have, I probably blocked it from my memory, to be honest.
I feel you there. I've had a lot of like, for me, the cringy moments kind of happen from fans. Like random people I've never met in my life that are like, that camera is bigger than you.
I mean, that's like a daily occurrence. I don't even know if I can call it cringy at this point. It's just like everyday part of life.
That's true.
People ask if you're going to be.
Darius, you're laughing a little too hard at me.
Yeah, because you've shared some of those stories, and I'm like.
Oh yeah. They always ask if it's heavy or if how am I, how like how are you holding that and stuff like that. Yeah.
Speaking of,
it weighs like a penny. What do you want me to say? Yeah, like
it's like I can flip this. Gear wise, what's some of your favorite gear to work with? Or are you a gearhead? Like are you like big into that or just like, whatever I got?
Yeah. I'm not a huge gearhead. Like I love looking at gear and like working with different gear, but I've pretty much since probably FSU, I've been with Sony. So that's kind of just been what I'm most comfortable with working on. Back at ODU, obviously, like so long ago, we were using like Panasonic 150s and P2 cards, so it wasn't anything, you know, high end.
I remember those days.
I don't even know if people know what P2 cards are anymore.
Oh yeah,
when I got it. But yeah, so I think starting at FSU, that we had a FS7, and I've just, when I went to Xavier, they didn't have any gear, so like they're like, "What? Just pick what you want." And that's what I used at FSU. So I was like, "Well, can we get an FS7?" And that's kind of what I've been using since.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that about ODU having Panasonic P2 cameras.
Yeah,
maybe this is going to be a bomb drop. Well, maybe this is going to be news to somebody. When I got to Texas, that's what they were using.
That is shocking.
Using what?
P2 cameras.
Am I following?
P2 cameras.
Wow.
Yes.
I mean, there is sometimes rhyme and reason to stick with some old gear.
Panasonic.
And old gear is becoming like a thing, a trend right now. Like everybody's like filming with their like dad's camcorders. So, yeah, you know, maybe they were just, you know, ahead of their time trying to be trendy. Yeah,
no, it was, they,
you're like, they should have been upgraded by them.
Yeah. So, you know, I ended up spending over $100,000 to get them out of the Stone Age. I mean, so when I got to Texas, there were like three or four different video departments. And so the marketing team had FS7s and some other things, and they also had Nikons and all this. So when I first got there, they were building a new department, and so the gear that we had when I first got there was like some P2 cameras, and LHN Longhorn Network was feeding to a recorder that was also a P2, and I just hated P2 for whatever reason. It was,
I feel you on that.
You know, being at the time I was really a gearhead, and it made me cringe for like 6 months having to deal with that. So, yeah. So, where would you like to see the sports industry creatively be in the next few years from your perspective?
Yeah. You know, I think right now we're plateauing a little bit. If I'm being honest, I think there's so much change and so much like innovation the last 5 to 10 years that now it's at a point where you don't have like the top teams creating like the quality videos or having the quality gear. I think it's a lot more spread out. It's a lot, you can see a lot more people doing a lot more of the same things, which, you know, is not a bad thing. It's just more of just everything's coming more standard. So I think moving forward, it's just how are people now, instead of trying to like get the clicks or go viral or whatever, it's like, how are we starting to, you know, resonate with like the people that we're actually creating content for, like whether it be the consumer, the fans, or the athletes, like how are we becoming like more focused on us? If I'm working, like I'm at the Big East, like, it's great that, you know, this school or this conference or whatever is making, you know, these long form pieces. But if that doesn't have any, like if the Big East, if our fans don't care about long form pieces, or if our fans aren't going to, you know, engage with that, like what do they want? What are they going to be engaged with? And I think the more, you know, everyone just starts, you know, a little bit more focus on, you know, where they are and what they can do to create the best experiences for their fans, or their athletes. I think that's probably the next step I think everybody's going to be making.
Do you think long form is dead?
I don't think long form is dead. I still think everyone's engaging with it. I think when you see these like Netflix specials or, you know, docuseries and all this other stuff, you can tell that people are watching it, but that's the platform and that's the level that you have to create it at. For people to, you know, really be engaged with it. And those are the stories that you have to tell. That all, like, if you're at a, you know, you know, a D1 school, but like it just, if you're telling that through like maybe your tennis program at a a D1 school, people may not be buying into that as much as watching it on Netflix with, you know, the top players right now.
Yeah, I think it also comes down to, is it good? Like, is it long just to be long, or is it like, is it engaging? Is it, is it informative? Like, people will watch long form content. I mean, shout out to a recent fan phenomenon, Club Shay Shay, but it's a great example to, if it's a good show, if it's a good piece of content, people will sit there and watch it. I just think that we've kind of conditioned ourselves to think, oh, people won't do it, and so we won't do it. Or people like, oh, well, my attention span is, I think it's a lazy way of thinking.
Yep. No, I
personally
agree.
Just because I like long form content, but I like long form content that is really good. Like, movies haven't gone out of style. 30-minute shows haven't gone out of style. Netflix hasn't gone out of style. We have all of these different avenues that are proving daily that, but that long form content in those scenarios takes time. Like, you can't just do something one day and then turn around 30 minutes for the next day. I think that form of it out of the question, right? But you still have 30 for 30s that are being produced that are really good. You still have long form interviews that are really good without B-roll, right? And so I always like to explore that with certain people, because people think that 5, 10, 30 second content is the only way to go, when it's been proven that you can still do it. So, D, thank you for spending a lot of time with us today and getting letting the public know who you are. It's been a joyous ride kind of seeing you from a social standpoint and kind of, you know, watching that journey. And glad that we got a chance to share that with the public.
Yeah, appreciate you all putting me on, and like I said before, to Karina, but also to you, Darius, like, you know, you're one of those people that for a long time have been following and seeing what you produce, and it is kind of funny that, you know, when you send me the DM, I was like, what? I was like, me?
Yeah, she did. She was like, you want to talk to me? I'm like, yes, you. You know,
yes. See that? I mean, we got to take our own advice. Like, apply to the jobs, put yourself out there, post the work, get on the podcast. I think it's, you know, it's easier said than done, for sure.
Yep.
But it's been such a pleasure chatting with you. And, you know, you dropped a lot of beautiful knowledge, and loved hearing about your life experiences, your career journey. It's spectacular. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the sports creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.